So I've got 10 or 15 minutes to talk about pregnancy, which clearly is not enough. And the fact that we get an hour and a half to talk about women and HIV-related issues every couple of years is clearly not enough. But anyway, we will press on. Okay, off my hobby horse. So because time is limited, I am going to concentrate very much on the drug prevention of mother-to-child transmission. So I'd like to thank Ashim for asking me to speak. More importantly, I'd like to thank all the women who medical care I've supervised over the years and have provided me with the inspiration to try and make this field a better one. I want something better to say. Okay, so that's my disclosures. The way I'm going to talk about this, I'm going to just mention a little bit about the current guidelines, and then I'm going to mention, discuss a little bit about updates from IAS. So there've been a lot of movement going on in this area. And then what does that mean for women living with HIV in Australia? And I think this is by far the most difficult area to look at, believe it or not. So just to remind everybody, we now abide by the principles of U equals U. So that should pertain to pregnant women as well. And that's very much how we operate. So for those of us who look after women who are HIV and pregnant, then our aim of treatment is to get the viral load down as quickly as possible and keep it there. It's worth bearing in mind that over the years, we've also wondered about the effect of transmission of the ARVs across the placenta and whether there is, in fact, an important PrEP effect for the baby. The viral load is only as good as the time it's measured. So if somebody hasn't had a viral load done for a while and then they rock up in delivery, who knows what's happened in between. So maybe a PrEP effect is important. And this has now become a little bit of an issue because traditionally the drugs we've used up until fairly recently have had good penetration across the placenta. But it's worth noting that, and this is where I'm trying to get my laser working. Nope, wrong one. It's worth noting that the cobicistat-elvitegravir combination is actually quite low in pregnant women, and there are concerns that it doesn't get across the placenta, and definitely TAF doesn't. When umbilical blood has been sampled, cord blood has been sampled, compared to TDF, there's no TAF. So that's worth bearing in mind. The other thing I think it's important to remember is that the woman is the most important thing here, and whatever works for the woman, keeps her adherent and keeps the viral load down, is what works, regardless of whether it adheres to guidelines or not. So the biggest controversy I'm sure you're all aware of is about the use of dolutegravir in the first 8 weeks of a pregnancy, because studies for Africa, which I'll talk about in a minute, have signaled that there may be a higher risk of neural tube defects. So the other important thing to remember at this point is that beyond 8 weeks, dolutegravir is great in pregnancy. And in fact, it probably will become a drug of choice going forward, but it's that first 8 weeks. And obviously the concern that flows on from that is that if a woman is already on it, she may not know that she's pregnant until 8 weeks, by which time the risk of neural tube defects has passed, and that may be an ongoing issue. So as a result of that, all the major guidelines last year suggested that dolutegravir should be stopped in the first 8 weeks of pregnancy if a woman's already on it, but was perfectly acceptable in most guidelines to be started after that period of time. There's the whole question of what to do with women of childbearing age. And again, the guidelines suggested that if a woman was not wanting to have children or was on a very reliable form of contraception, whatever that means, then that's fine to continue dolutegravir. But otherwise, you need to have a discussion with the woman and you need to ensure that they understand the risks. Otherwise, they need to use another form of contraception. So that's where we were until July of this year. So most guidelines have suggested that we use the NUC backbone that we're familiar with, and that's up there, plus preferably either a PI, darunavir or atazanavir, but not boosted with cobicistat, so boosted with ritonavir. Most information we've got is about atazanavir, so that's actually recommended as first-line treatment in some guidelines. I'm not sure what I think about that, but darunavir seems to be okay. And the other option is using an integrase inhibitor like raltegravir. The problem with raltegravir, obviously, is that you have to give it BD in pregnancy, which may be an issue for some women. There's also some evidence that NNRTIs are fine. Efavirenz is actually now very safe, so that can be used. And rilpivirine can also be used. And as I've noted, avoid cobicistat, boosted agents, and also TAF at this stage. Although I think that will change. And if you are able to monitor a woman really closely, that may not be such an issue. So this is where this has all come from, is the SAPAMO study. I'm not going to go into it in any detail, but this is an excellent study. I saw Rebecca Zash present this at IIS, and this is a really well-done observational prospective study. A lot of the information we've got about dolutegravir use in pregnancy has come from not particularly well. It's all retrospective, so it's not particularly well controlled, but this is really good. And so this is what the problem has been. They were actually looking at the effects of efavirenz in pregnancy because they believed that there were neurological issues perinatally with efavirenz. So in Botswana, when they started the study in 2014, the standard of care was an efavirenz-containing regimen. In 2016, a dolutegravir-containing regimen was introduced, so they had the opportunity to look at both those medications perinatally, either before conception or during pregnancy. The good news is that it's perfectly safe during pregnancy, as is efavirenz-containing regimens, but you'll probably remember that this signal, which showed that there's a significantly increased risk of neural tube defects. Thing to bear in mind is that this is only 4 out of 596. If you just cast your mind back to the risk of neural tube defects, it's about 1 in 1,000 live births. So this is significantly increased. As a result of this, the Botswana government expanded the study to cover 75% of all women in Botswana, which is excellent. And what they have found in their follow-up data, that there was only one further baby born with a neural tube defect. So that takes the figure to 5 cases out of nearly 1,700 births. The problem is, because this defect, the neural tube defect, is so unusual, you need at least 2,000 births with women who are taking dolutegravir at the time of conception to actually determine whether there is a real risk or not from dolutegravir. So we're not quite there yet. So I think what this means for us is that there remains a signal with dolutegravir. I think I heard somebody clarify what that actually meant in real terms. So the Botswanan community don't have folate-enriched foods. So in a community where there isn't folate-enriched foods, there's a fourfold risk of a baby having neural tube defect if the mother is on dolutegravir at the time of conception. In a community like ours, where food is enriched, there's a twofold increase. So there's still an increase at the present time until we've got more information from this cohort, and I think this is the one to watch. However, the WHO modelled this, and the benefits of being on dolutegravir in terms of preventing maternal deaths, transmission to babies, transmission to partners, was far outweighed the risk of neural tube defects. So they've made the decision that dolutegravir-containing regimes will be their first-line treatment. So I think we're going to get a lot of very useful information in the next couple of years about how real this signal is. So what about women in Australia? Because I think this leaves us in a very difficult situation. When you're pregnant, you don't want to take anything that might even remotely possibly affect your baby. So those of us who've been pregnant know that. So we're already dealing with a difficult situation if you're having to take medication through your pregnancy. So aside from the transmission of HIV, we are dealing with something which could potentially cause problems. I think it really relies on, firstly, whether the patient that you're seeing is on reliable contraception. And I think reliable contraception is a bit iffy. I mean, I've certainly had some patients who've had long-acting agents in situ and have not told me that they have had them taken out because they didn't want to tell me that they wanted to get pregnant and have been on dolutegravir, and that's been very difficult. So that's the first thing, I think, to establish that. The next thing is to establish whether the woman truly understands what the consequences could potentially be. This is a very low-risk event, but it's certainly something which is catastrophic if it does happen. I have a lot of patients who come from a culled background and sometimes who don't speak English as a first language, and it can be very difficult to get across the nuances of what this is all about. I think if there's any doubt in your mind, if you have somebody of childbearing age, you may want to consider quite carefully whether they should be on a dolutegravir-containing regimen at this very moment in time. That may change. Even in a couple of months' time, it may change. But I think at the moment, it's quite difficult to justify carrying on with it. So what dilemmas do I think we still have? Well, we don't really know about second-generation INSTIs. I think it's going to be years before we get any information on bictegravir. But I think dolutegravir will probably, certainly if a woman is already pregnant, I think it's a very good thing to use. And I think it's excellent, particularly in late presenters. It drops the viral load extremely quickly. So it's a very good drug to have through later pregnancy. What about TAF? I think our information is limited at present, but I think I have less concerns about TAF than I do about dolutegravir, for example. And it may be fine if we're monitoring viral load regularly. So the other issue, I think, is I would like timely access to therapeutic drug monitoring, particularly in people who may be on medication whose levels may be a bit variable. So, for example, if I wanted to continue somebody on a elvitegravir-cobicistat regime for whatever reason, I would like to be able to do levels so that I know it's safe. Present, I don't have access. I don't know about anybody else, but I certainly don't have access to timely drug monitoring levels. So, practice points. Dolutegravir is safe, and perhaps is the preferred option for women after 8 weeks of gestation. And as I've already mentioned, the use of dolutegravir depends on all these issues. And can we get therapeutic drug monitoring? There you go, got 2 minutes to go.